I literally can't believe how lucky I am. This new report came out yesterday about strokes, and it's really fascinating. And I just happen to have the guy who knows about strokes. He's the expert, Dr. Alejandro Ornick. He joined me last year, and it's first off, Doc, it's good to see you again.
Good to be here.
Now, of course, when we were talking with you last year, it was the ability to diagnose strokes remotely. You call it telestroke. I say remote diagnosis. Same thing, same, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So have you seen that? Get a chance to absorb any of this new stroke report that came out yesterday?
No.
It's fascinating. You mind if I share some of it with you?
No, of course.
People 65 and up, strokes are down. The incident strokes are down. Now, the demographic where strokes are up is the younger demographic, 25, 44-year-olds, a 44% increase in strokes between 2000 and 2010. 44% increase in the 25-44. And they say there's a number of reasons why. Obesity, sports, hormones, birth control, and which I'm a little detached from that portion. Somebody's going to have to convince me more of those four. You could be one of those guys.
Absolutely. There is, first of all, we know when I started training in neurology, we used to say that stroke was the third cause of death in America, and now it's number five. Doctors, especially primary care doctors, are doing an amazing job helping patients diagnose and control things like hypertension. Overall, America has stopped smoking, so the trends of smoking have decreased significantly. And
Smoking was not mentioned in the 25-44 category as an increase in strokes, and that I thought that was interesting.
Yeah,
it wasn't mentioned.
All these preventative strategies have helped significantly decrease the presence of stroke in the population that was more prone to having strokes, that were the older patients.
The 65 and above.
Exactly. But right now we're having a national epidemic of obesity, and it's affecting younger people.
And that was mentioned as one of the four categories. Obesity
exactly.
Was really actually prominent.
And this is driving things like hypertension presenting in young patients. And this is driving things like diabetes presenting in young patients. So suddenly, what we're having now is that we're having patients that age-wise, they're young, but they're presenting with most of the illnesses that we used to see in patients that were, 65 and older. So this is changing the paradigm on how we're looking at stroke. Before, when we had a younger patient, we'll be looking at genetical reasons for why they could be having a stroke, reasons why their blood would be prone to be thicker. And we still do that, right? But also now we're seeing patients that are very young, that they think that just being young is something that is going to protect your health no matter what you do, no matter what you eat, no matter how much you don't exercise, and they end up having exactly the same problems that somebody who is much older would. Obesity, high blood pressure, diabetes, and these things, and of course smoking, and these things are going to really increase your overall cardiovascular and cerebrovascular risks.
Well, one of my favorite lyricists for a band says was talking about in youth, you're only immortal for a limited time. And you know that feeling when you're young and you think you're going to live forever. And sometimes, at least in my case, I took part in extreme behaviors, risky behaviors, we'll call them. And now, after listening to you speak, it turns out we're not even immortal in our youth. We've become old with quality of life issues at an earlier age. That kind of bothers me, I think, a little bit. I think that youth and the enthusiasm and the fun and sometimes risky behavior go along, that now we smoke. Well, you said smoking down, but we eat ourselves into an unhealthy lifestyle. And then sexually, I mean, they're saying the reason why so many of these strokes in the younger category, birth control in relationship to your hormones.
So birth
control,
that
surprised me a little too, Doc.
Yeah, so birth control, estrogen replacement therapies have been linked to increased risk for cardiovascular and cerebrovascular illnesses.
Because of the elasticity of the cardiovascular system is affected by the hormones?
I don't know exactly what is in this. This has been an epidemiological data that when we look at people that are taking these medications or this hormonal replacement, in especially the postmenopausal years, the risk for heart attacks and strokes increase. We used to think back in time that it was actually something that we used to protect patients, but indeed it ended up being something that increases the risk for stroke.
Well, I guess it all depends on which hormone, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess you can say that and still be right. It all depends on which hormone you're talking about.
And how old you are, because the initial reason is that we used to see that premenopausal patients used to have less risk for stroke, and then we assumed that when a patient would be postmenopausal, if we continue giving the same hormones they had, we'll protect them from cardiovascular and cerebrovascular risks, but ended up being the other way around. So the key is that if you're younger and you have and you're taking birth control medications, it's important to do other things that will pay attention to avoiding other things that will increase your risk. For instance, if somebody is taking birth control pills, it's good to know if you have family history of heart attacks or strokes,
right,
or clots in the legs, or pulmonary embolisms. And also it's very good to know that if you also smoke, then the risk starts going up. So this is something that is very important, what you're mentioning. We get to see, most of our patients are older, right? And we get to see them in the hospital, and we try to take advantage of the opportunity around stroke patients. So when we have our grandpa with a stroke in the hospital, we usually look around the room, and we try to look for the younger patients in the family, the younger family members, and utilize this situation to show about what you're saying, to show about the consequences of certain risky behaviors that we don't understand they're risky, because usually the problems occur many years after you engage them.
Right.
So we're all aware of, somehow it's very funny, I was listening the other day, we're all very worried about sometimes planes falling or cars having accidents,
right,
but we're not afraid of, you know, French fries and pizza, right?
Because of the immediate reaction to when something goes wrong. I call this the dog syndrome, and I'm sorry, but you know, back when I was a kid, the first thing you did when a dog relieved himself on the carpet was you rubbed his nose in it, and you did it quickly because he associated the bad thing and the punishment so closely together that he changed his behavior.
We used to do in Argentina, too.
Right?
Yeah.
So now it's you have a pack of cigarettes in 1899. In 2009, you have a stroke. And that disassociation allows us not to learn our lesson. And I literally just spent the last day with a guy at a Heron hospital before he died, the age of 79, who looked at me and told me, he says, the reason why I'm here today is because I smoke cigarettes. This is why I'm here. He quit 20 years before, but he knew it was the reason why he was there today. He died the next morning after I spent the afternoon with him.
I'm sorry about that.
But, you know, that makes that real for me. And now when you say you take that opportunity with patients in the room with their family to teach that, I can see where some people might be a little flinch back a bit from that. Quite frankly, it's effective. And if you're willing to save somebody's life by taking 5 minutes and be educational and have this moral lesson right before you on literally the altar of a bed, then why wouldn't you?
This is a...
Not to put it, I guess I'm a little morbid. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be maudlin, but I see this. Makes sense to me.
This is, you know, a very pragmatic approach. Sometimes if something's going to happen anyway, right? If grandpa or grandma are going to have a stroke and they're doing okay and you get the family all together in the hospital room, you know, we try to take every opportunity we can to teach our community about stroke. And this is a great opportunity because these people are going to go out, back to school, back to their work and say, hey, you know what, maybe I'm going to cut down on certain things like smoking, or I'm going to, you know, have a little less fast food. We're not in a crusade against fast food, but we're just saying maybe it's not the only food you should have.
Right. Right? Everybody likes a French fry, man. Why not? Right.
I love them,
but not every day.
Exactly.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know. Well, that doesn't, by the way, mean okay. Then have fried onion rings tomorrow. That, by the way, that does not work. We're talking about frying it. Period. And I asked you this last time, and it's funny how my thought processes change over a period of time, especially after meeting you last time. You left a pretty big impression on me. I've started thinking about strokes like I think about autism, that it's a spectrum. I mean, we always used to think we'll cure cancer and then we'll have the silver bullet and we'll shoot the silver bullet and cure cancer. We can't. There's lots of different cancers, lots of different causes. Strokes, kind of the same way. And I think that spectrum portion that has started to occupy my mind in relationship to strokes is the spectrum in the way in which you recover if you get the opportunity to do so. And so what is this? I mean, how many different kinds of stroke are there? I mean, there's...
I'm going to give you a great answer. Innumerable. There are...
Really? But yeah, as because, many as different kinds of people there are.
Well, the issue is the following. We utilize... There is a dichotomy, right? We utilize the word stroke to define brain attacks, right? And when we talk about brain attacks, we have a big divide, you know. Half of them are caused by... not half, but the greatest majority are caused by lack of blood flow to the brain. And then it all depends of what part of your brain lacks blood flow. And then a smaller percentage, but still big number, is caused by brain bleeding. And then it all depends on where you bleed and
how
you bleed, exactly, and what symptoms you will have. And then we try to, you know, scientifically speaking, it's innumerable. We have innumerable reasons for what a person could have a brain attack. Sometimes people have mimickers or things like look like brain attacks, but they're not. The issue is that while we are scientifically being very detailed, when we're talking about our patients and our community, we really want to be very simplistic and want to group everything in one because we don't want people to be thinking too much if this is happening. We want them to look for help right away.
All right. Now, this is the place where we were for you in particular, because it's interesting, and because I had the opportunity to diagnose a stroke firsthand recently. I told you this story last time. I literally had the FAST card I had saved on my desk that gave me the rundown on how to diagnose a stroke. I knew what was going on with this person. I went back to my desk. I grabbed it, and I memorized it because I didn't want them to think I was, you know, reading off a card and diagnosing them off a card. You know, supposed to know everything, aren't I? And I literally said, you have to go now. You've already put it off too long. You need to go. You got to go. But I feel fine. I'll be better in a minute. I just need to lay down. No, because we have the golden minutes, the golden hour. And this once again comes where you have the spectrum of outcomes based on how fast you can get help. But to get help, you have to be diagnosed. And that is what you have brought to Southern Illinois. This ability to be anywhere in Southern Illinois. Matter of fact, I think after you left the studios, you were on the phone within 10 minutes diagnosing somebody with a stroke in DuCoin from our parking lot, if I remember correctly.
Well, this is a reality now. You're completely correct. We are right now able to be at the bedside through some technology of right now 7 hospitals in the region. So last time we were talking, this was starting. Now it is a reality. It's happening multiple times a week now, where our local hospital, local doctors from regional hospitals are reaching out to us. We are able to log in and be through a computer screen with very strong cameras at the bedside of patients that are having neurological problems, and we're able to examine them with help of nurses, and we can try at least to change their outcome. We're also taking the time to talk to their families and to talk to the nurses and to talk to the doctors. And this is creating a positive feedback in which the doctors now know that they have help that can arrive there immediately for what they're more prone to be interested in the topic and to update themselves in the topic. And we're going back to these hospitals and we're providing education and feedback on how their patients did. And this is creating a loop in which now patients are being discharged and going back to their community and saying, you know what, our maybe smaller hospital now has this new tremendous, you know, capabilities
right.
that can change
and,
outcome.
And see, the words you used a couple of moments ago was instantly. See, because instead of going driving 50 miles an hour to get someplace, you can in essence be by there at the foot of their bed with the nurses being your hands. And see, this is the part that I find interesting. Dr. Alejandro Hornick is joining us today, is that they're your hands, your powers of observation through a high-definition camera that you literally can look at on your cell phone if you need to, because your powers of observation and your years of experience can come to bear very quickly in 7 hospitals in the area. Because what if it's not a stroke? What if it's something else?
Exactly.
And see, in that little divide right there, I find to be crucial, because that other thing that it might be, is saying, look, we're going to have to get another kind of help here. This is not a stroke. This is something else, and we've got to start figuring out what this is quick.
Or maybe we can say, you're having symptoms. You came to the hospital right away. We looked at you, and you're right, and you can go home because this is okay. And that is sometimes as important.
See, what about, I like that a lot.
Okay, because what if you have symptoms, and instead of being unsure of what's going on and getting into a very expensive and sometimes risky workup, you can see somebody and go home. You know, we had, I will never forget this, a few weeks after I arrived to the region, we had this patient that had, I was consulted for head trauma and potential brain bleeding.
Right.
The patient was being ready to be flown out of the region. And I was able to, we didn't have the remote login at that point, so I drove to a regional hospital. We saw the patient, we interpreted the images, and we found out that in fact there was no brain bleeding, there was just a normal anatomical variant of the brain, and we were able to discharge a patient home that same night. The patient that was going to be flown to a regional larger center, get away from the family, spend all this money and resources, not only from the patient but from the healthcare system, ended up going home within 2 hours.
All right. You know my practical application of that? That saved somebody $18,000. Sorry. It did. It served somebody $18,000. That's about the price of a helicopter flight from Carbondale to St. Louis. So, I'm sorry, I hate to be a bean counter because it's human lives, but somebody's got to pay that. And if you find out I just took an $18,000 flight I didn't have to take, somebody's going to be kind of ticked off.
Well,
so,
you know, as a younger doctor who was raised and trained in very large cities, in very large medical centers, sometimes you expect that you'll create the best amount of impact in changing a patient's life with a very esoteric illness. But sometimes it's the very simple things that we do that can create a huge difference in patients and their families.
And that's one of the reasons why I like you, Dr. Hornick. I thought that was very well said.
Thank you.
All right, we have one responsibility we have to discharge before I let you go today. Somebody thinks somebody at their coworker's having a stroke. Let's talk to them. We got just a couple of seconds here. Let's keep it lean and mean, Doc. I think somebody's got a stroke. Somebody's having a stroke. Maybe their coworker comes to me and says, I don't know, buddy. Something's going on up here with this person. You want to come up here and let's see if we can talk to him a minute? What questions do I ask him? What do I ask them to do?
So if you think that somebody's having a stroke, as you mentioned very, very well, there are different things that people remember to try to think about this. But the most important thing is if you see somebody who has new onset of problems with their vision, with their face movements, with their talking, if they look confused, but they weren't confused a few minutes ago. If they have weakness or they're falling for no reason, if they cannot move one arm or one leg, the most important thing to do is to call 911.
These signs that you're talking about, the face drooping, can be exceedingly subtle around an eye, around a mouth. You say, look, I want you to put both arms out, palms down, and flat with your shoulders. It could be just the smallest bit of droop in one arm. No, I need you to keep that arm level. And if they can't do it, some of these things can be very, very subtle. And the powers of observation that you've trained over years are one of the reasons why this tele-interventionist for stroke treatment in Southern Illinois is so good to be able to have trained powers of observation. But we all have a first-line responsibility in getting a family member into the care system when we see these problems.
And the most important thing is not to ever doubt yourself. If you think something's going on, we want you to call 911. Nobody will ever be disappointed or upset. We will quickly take a look at your loved ones or your coworkers, and you know what? We'll quickly tell you things are all right and you don't have to worry. But if something is wrong, you know, the best thing is always just to call.
Is an aneurysm a stroke?
No, an aneurysm is a weakness of one of the walls of a blood pipe in the brain.
Okay. Next time, maybe we'll talk about that another thing.
Looking forward.
Because I always enjoy talking about it, and I always keep you way too long, too. And I know you've got work to do. Dr. Hornick, it's always good to see you. Dr. Alejandro Hornick, 7 hospitals, tele-intervention when it comes to stroke. This is one of the things that, quite frankly, it doesn't matter which age you are. With these new demographics, an increase in 25-44 strokes in this country, and that is a nationwide, a 44, almost a double incidence in 10 years in increases. Dr. Hornick, it's good to talk to you again.
Glad to be here.
844.